Create a creator. Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? Create a creator. Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? Am I this hard of hearing? Or are you not answering my calls? Cause I broke a couple of your rules last night, and you decided to leave me alone in this world. Oh, I gave the world my love last night, gave the world my blood last night. Whoa. I gave the world my blood last month, I gave the world my love last month. Create a creator. Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? Create a creator. Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? If I just lost my sight tonight, cause I don't see all the miracles you left around. Have I lost my faith and all my fright to be left or buried beneath the ground? Oh, I gave the world my love last night, gave the world my blood last night. Whoa, I gave the world my blood last month, gave the world my love last month. Whoa. Create a creator. Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? Create a creator. Why do you not listen to me no more? Oh, my Lord.
For their long-awaited Australian debut, California's psychedelic darlings, Mazzy Star, perform their only Australian shows at Vivid Live. Celebrating 25 years since the release of their million-plus selling album, So Tonight That I Might See, plus the release of their brand new EP, Still. Book now for Mazzy Star this June 11 to 13 at sydneyoperahouse.com/vividlive. Sponsors of 2SER.
Think digital futures.
Stories from the digital age.
Today's technology transforming tomorrow.
Sundays on 2SER 107.3.
Or you can catch the podcast. Subscribe to Think Digital Futures now on your podcast app of choice.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture right here on 2SCR 107.3 with me, Sophie. You might have already seen a little preview of Bangarra Dance Theatre's latest work with the bodies of their dancers illuminated on the southern pylon of the Sydney Harbour Bridge as part of Vivid. The work, A Dark Emu, is choreographed by artistic director Stephen Page and longtime Bangarra dancers and collaborators Yolanda Brown and Daniel Riley, and is inspired by Bruce Pascoe's award-winning book that challenges the hunter-gathering myth of pre-colonial Aboriginal Australians. Joining us on the line now is Wiradjuri man, Bangarra senior dancer and choreographer Daniel Riley. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's happening this Friday. How has everything been for you?
Good. We've been, traveling along and just putting puzzle pieces together, and just now it's about massaging the work, like the choreography with the lighting and the costumes and the sets, and the whole kind of bringing all the elements together, I suppose.
Mm. So, what made you guys turn to Bruce Pascoe's work in the first place for this creation?
That would probably be a good question for Stephen, in that he's artistic director. So Stephen comes up with the concepts and the kind of the ideas that us as a company want to push forward. And I think that he ran into Bruce at some point last year at the Writers' Festival on the wharf where Bangarra is situated. They were just, they know each other, and they said hello and knew Bruce had seen was coming to see Bennelong, and he was very excited about seeing Bennelong, and they ended up coming to opening night of Bennelong here in Sydney. And Bruce mentioned just like, oh, you should do Dark Emu the work. And I think Stephen kind of laughed it off and was like, yeah, that would be really great, like maybe in the future. And I think it just stuck with him, and he'd heard of the book obviously, and how kind of important the written work has become, for Australian mainstream audiences who like to, read and digest literature and, books of importance and historical importance also. And look, the book is nothing that Indigenous Australians didn't already know in terms of the connection, and how important the connection to country is and to land and the song cycles of backburning and the reciprocal relationships between Aboriginal Australians and animals in hunting together, and this connection to cycles of seed harvesting. And so the book states all of that knowledge in a clear kind of academic way.
Mm.
And we were just really interested and really fascinated that how we can bring this, the ideas and the concepts of that book to life on stage from our Black perspective.
Yeah, I mean, because the book, as you mentioned, it kind of really looks into sophisticated land care, agriculture, as well as aquaculture practices of Indigenous Australians. How do you kind of explore that in dance?
That's a good question. Through a relationship that Stephen has with a dramaturg called Alana Valentine, between Alana and Stephen read the book and really pulled the book apart and looked at the key concepts in each chapter. The way the book is broken up is in chapters, obviously. And so they looked at, what's the true Black Aboriginal kind of First Nations connection in this story. What's important about that? What's important about the backburning, and what's important about fire? or a ceremony of seed harvest, the connection to creator god Bayami. You know, what is so important, and what's the strongest kind of feeling that comes out of those ideas and concepts? And so from pulling apart the book, we came up with a storyboard, in a way, of a running kind of flowing narrative and how the work will unfold. And that's what we stuck to through creation.
Mm. So the narrative itself is set through a series of interconnected stories. What are these kind of stories that you're kind of weaving?
Stories from that, like that Alanis pulled from the book. You know, stories of the creator god Bayami, and that creation of, you know, before we were human, what was there? So through the ceremony of grain harvest, through to the ceremony and the ritual of land management through fire, the songline connection from the Bogong moths in the snowy mountains down at, through all the way, and how the Bogong moth story connects down to Eden, which is, and there's a humpback whale, or killer whale story down in Eden, and so we look at that songline. We look at fish traps, like the Bruwarrina fish traps that Bruce talks a lot about in the book, and you know, we dissected it, and we how we connect to, you know, that kind of that architecture and that way of hunting and the building, but the weighting of that, you know, the ingenuity, I suppose, is a great word that the book the book very clearly sets out the ingenuity of Aboriginal Australia, you know, and but then on the mirrored side of that, and how, you know, how sad and a shame it was that colonialism and the colonial invasion didn't see that. Well, they chose not to see that, you know. There's a blind ignorance there where they'd sat and just watched for long enough that they could have learnt, but they didn't want to. You know, they were ignorant enough to just turn a blind eye and just go, no, we'll do what we want to do.
Mm.
So we'd also look at that relationship as well.
Yeah. You mentioned all the song lines as well as some, like, the traditional rituals. Do you have to do a lot of community consultation when you kind of go through these communities and look back at their ancient rituals?
Yes, always. Stephen's, you know, very conscious of making sure that we're representing that nation correctly, in the right way, you know, and that the politics are right and we're talking to the right people. And that's kind of, you know, that's the important part of Bangarra as a foundation, is to find these nations and these stories and represent them correctly and to their maximum, and, you know, and to their strengths, to the maximum strength, so they can have a maximum impact, and, you know, to help these stories continue to live and survive and flourish, in our kind of this mainstream world.
Mm. I mean, it sounds like it's been quite a process moving from the concept to the movement as well as the music. How was that with you collaborating with Stephen and Yolanda?
It's happened really organically and naturally. Each of us were drawn to different parts or different stories or different visuals. And then, you know, there was just a faith and a trust that, okay, you go do that and I'll do this and you do that. And we kind of, you know, pulling it all together now to make it one show. So, it kind of happened really naturally and organically. And then there's a trust, just to trust, you know, each other and know that that they will give, you know, that it will just unfold the way it does.
Mm. Now, as I mentioned in my intro, some of your bodies are already being projected on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. How did that all come about?
They are. That's a relationship that's been going on for a few years now between Bangarra and Vivid, and that's designed by our head designer, Jake Nash. And, you know, it's really, I think it's really, it's a beautiful imagery, and it's a really, you know, to project First Nation stories on, you know, the iconic Harbour Bridge, I think is really important. And and that the Opera House, which is Bennelong Point, and it's, you know, the whole cove, the sacredness of the cove, I suppose, and the sacredness of connecting to that is, you know, we're projecting onto a man-made structure, but how it all connects to land and to, you know, where we're situated, I think, is really important. So it's a really beautiful kind of special time of year for Bangarra to see, or for the general public as well, to see stories and our connection to, whether it's our current show or whatever the stories we're telling, but projected up there, and that people can see that and digest that, and, you know, in their own way. And it's a really beautiful thing.
Fantastic. And just finally, what do you want people to take away from Dark Emu?
Such a hard question to answer. And I should get used to it by now, because everyone's always asking.
Well, this one's got a lot of punch.
So. Yeah, I know. I would love people to just to take a deeper respect and understanding of the land and how important it is to us. You know, not just us as Aboriginal First Nations, but to everybody who lives here now. You know, there's such this wanting to claim and to own and feel like you belong somewhere in the world. You know, where doesn't that's the that's happening here in Australia with, you know, there's kind of crazy movements of, you know, not wanting to have anybody from overseas belong here and live
right.
here, and, you know, that there's that all happening, and people just wanting to claim and say, no, this is mine, you can't have it. And, you know, I just think I would just love people to have a deeper respect for who the land first belonged to.
Yep.
You know, and just to have an understanding of how history is unfolded. It wasn't all, you know, what we were taught at school. It just wasn't, and that's the fact and reality of it. You know, God, I remember when I was at school, I was taught Captain Cook. I was like, you know, that's the start of Australia.
Yeah.
You know, like the blind ignorance of that, to not teach kids. And I'm sure it's changing now, and I hope it's changed by the time my son goes to school. But, you know, that kind of ignorance of wanting to shun that part, the you know, what, like 50,900 and whatever that number would be, but the 60,000 years plus before that is what set up this country and what set up, you know, and how important that connection is to land and country and stories and culture. You know, I'd love people to just have a deeper understanding and respect for that.
Mm. I mean, that whole hunter-gatherer myth, it still perpetuates even today. Do you think this work will break through
that? Oh, no doubt. I would love to say that people will come and see Bangarra and or read the book. You know, like if you read the book and you want to see the visual aspect of it, and maybe that they will play hand in hand, you know. But I would love to say that if you read the book and see the show, you all of a sudden your mind is changed. You know, some people aren't changed as quickly, and people are very stubborn. They're very stubborn in the way that they think, and they're not interested in other ideas. Well, most people, that's a generality, right? You know, but some people are very, I just choose not to see that. And in a way, that's a colonial way of looking at it too. You know, and the story in the start of Dark Emu is what the Dark Emu is looking into the sky. And when we look at the Dark Emu, what colonial explorers saw were the stars, and they connected the dots and realized that it looked like an emu. But as Aboriginal First Nations people, we don't look at the stars, we look what's in between.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at the space, and we look at the blackness in the middle, which is why it's called, you know, Dark Emu. So that symbolism is perfect for how the book unfolds and what we're trying to represent as this, you know, as the dance version of that. It's what you don't see, it's what you're not looking at, is what we're trying to show you.
Well, we can't wait to see it. But Daniel, thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was Bangarra senior dancer and choreographer Daniel O'Reilly. You can see Dark Emu at the Sydney Opera House from this Friday through to the 14th of July. I'll put all those details up on 2SCR.com. Just look for So Hot Right Now and everything will be there, including this podcast. I'm going to jump back into the music now. Here's some brand new music from Gabriella Cohen, a bit of an Australian songstress. This one's called Music Machine.
Piece of green. shut down Venice Beach.
Climate change poses the same threat right now.
Wind is destroying a lot of problems. And number one, it's killing the birds. Killing the birds. Killing the birds.
World is burning.
Killing
right now.
Coral bleaching.
Solar panels.
The Carmichael mine.
Carbon emissions.
World is burning.
Hydraulic fracturing.
Plastic bags.
This is too much.
What are we doing to the planet? Subscribe to Think Sustainability on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to find out.
The world is burning.
The hottest day of winter is back, with the Bank Hotel hosting the second annual Newtown Chili Fest. On June 10th, head to the Bank Hotel for one spicy Sunday, with chili eating competitions, chili-inspired beers, live music, and fiery food specials. Can you beat last year's chili champion? For details on how to enter the competition and more info on the day, head to bankhotel.com.au. The Bank Hotel, proud sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
This is So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of art and a culture. And now it's time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with...
Blake Howard?
And Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard. I love graffiti with punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. Happy wet winter Sydney Saturday.
Oh, but it's a long weekend.
It is. We've got lots of nice things to do. If you're around Sydney, you know that 2SER is a partnership, media partnership sponsor of the Sydney Film Festival. So
which started this week.
Started on Wednesday night. So if you guys want to get out there and escape the rain, there is nowhere better to snuggle up than at the Sydney Film Fest. And you may be able to snuggle up next to me. I'll be often eating a burrito during the daytime.
I would love just to see like this little blanket like pile in the corner of each cinema. It's like, yeah, that's Blake. He's slept here for the past 2 weeks. He's not moving.
Not that crazy, but absolutely will be there. And yeah, get along, enjoy it. There are so many great flicks to see and so many cool people to hang out with. So good stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of cool people.
Oh my God.
We hung out with the coolest.
Oh my God. Madeline Sammy, Jackie Van Beek, the writers, directors and stars and just all around badass ladies from the Breaker Operas, which you might have seen in a big candy colored, hilarious trailer online and heard it in previous episodes of Gaggle of Geeks. Here we talked about it. It's executive produced by Taika Waititi. These amazing ladies are here to launch the Sydney Film Fest and they kicked it off in absolute style. And we were so lucky to have a chat with them.
Have you had enough of your unhappy relationship, but are finding it really, really, really hard, and we mean super hard, to break up with someone? Never fear. Enter the Breaker Operas, who will do the hard work for you. The opening film for this year's Sydney Film Festival. And joining us now from the faraway land of New Zealand is the Breaker Operas directors and stars, Jackie Van Beek and Madeline Sammy. Hello.
Hello.
It's like in a little alt title there, the Upper Breakers.
Maybe in the Northern Hemisphere they'll play it like they're upside down and inside out.
Yeah. There's an alternative Denmark poster where that's the title.
With us looking super serious with some ice or something.
Yeah, by a lake.
Yeah, by a blue
steaming lake.
Ooh, and there's a murder and there's a knife.
Yeah, and it's comedy.
You did top of the lake, right? So that's
done
it.
You guys.
I wasn't actually. I'm just shooting a a crime drama at home at the moment. I'm acting in it, playing a detective, being very serious. So it's
way more serious.
I flipped the switch completely.
Madeline shows me her kind of acting sometimes, and she just does a lot of like really serious like frowns and then glances around the room a lot. She's a detective.
Glance around the room a lot.
It's really entertaining.
I have to go. Look, you can save us both a lot of trouble, mate, if you just blow it. And honestly, all the actors have seen me in this latest film, The Breaker Uppers. They crack up at me because they don't want to take me seriously.
Because you're an idiot.
That's true.
You're an idiot who's been cast in a really cool crime drama.
That's true.
And I'm jealous.
I think the producers are kicking themselves.
I was going to say, if you didn't get the audition because of your exceptional police work in The Breaker Upper, I don't really know what else is going on.
I actually turned up the first day that no one in New Zealand's going to hear this, eh?
Are they? Nah.
Are they? Nah.
Maybe
not.
So
I turned up the first day, guys, and there's a bit in the movie. You've seen it.
I've seen it.
And I actually, because New Zealand's such a small pool of actors, I had to do exactly the same scene. I'm not going to give it away.
Mm.
But I had to do exactly the same scene, but just in a drama with the same actor from the movie. And no one, the producers didn't pick up on it, so they'll probably have to cut that.
I'm just going to watch that episode.
Just to see. Compare notes?
Yeah. Just have
Jackie that. Auditioned for my boss in this drama.
Yeah, I didn't even get a callback.
I shouldn't get a callback.
I think maybe I was playing it too hard, like too tough, too cool.
Yeah, probably. I can see you doing that.
You playing too hard or too tough? So I was lucky enough to see the film already. I wanted to say it's amazing. So it's absolutely sensational. I saw it at 9 o'clock in the morning, which is unusual. No drinks. But I'm so desperate to see it again that I'm going to go see it at the opening night again. It's
great.
Fantastic.
Yay.
And I'm just flabbergasted with your cast. They are freaking hilarious, every single one of them. And I have a real soft spot for Michael Mann, so your joke about Last of the Mohicans as Mel Madeline was phenomenal. Like, I'm a big fan of him and that film.
Oh, yeah.
I was waiting for another callback line. That
Damn
was my
it.
First question.
If we'd had more than 22 days to shoot our film, there definitely would have been Last of the Mohicans.
Because, Jack, I can see her with a Daniel Day-Lewis head vein, like, screaming that to you, no matter how long it takes, no matter how far.
There's an idea in there. There's an idea in there. I love the waterfall jump, yeah.
The waterfall.
It's beautiful.
You guys are now, in the top 30 grossing films of all time in New Zealand.
I think we made the top 20.
Now in the top 20.
I think we're
inching closer to the top 10.
Oh, wow.
Do you think? Could we say that? We've had 22 films made in New Zealand over the last 50 years and we are in the top.
Has it been awesome?
She gets very distracted, especially in an interview. She's pressing all the buttons. Has it been awesome?
One
are we
today.
Talking about the movie? Yeah, it's been awesome.
It's been awesome. But you know what's awesome? I'm bringing it back on track. That's what I do.
Here well we go.
You know what's awesome?
We get to see
Celia Piccola today.
Yes.
Who's also in the movie. Amazing. And our co-star, Anna Scotney, has just flown over from New Zealand. So we're very excited to see them as well today.
Anna Scotney, I would hazard to say, nearly steals the whole movie final act.
You can say it.
You can say it.
I think it's a credit to your phenomenal writing. She just has so much to do. Like, she has so much to do.
Anna did a lot of, we did a lot of improvisation in the film, and Anna is an incredible improviser. Like, she would just start and just not stop until we didn't want to ever say cut.
If one of us was direct, we'd just be in tears behind the camera, just letting it roll.
Yeah.
Wasting all of our shooting time.
Then we had to remember to get ourselves on screen sometimes. We'd have to go, oh, we've got to do our bit.
Oh, we've got 10 minutes to shoot the final scene of the movie because we wasted all that time on the improv, but oh well.
Yeah.
Hey, it's all in the movie. It's great.
It's all there, yeah.
How was it directing yourselves?
It was pretty weird. It was just, it was quite all-consuming, you know. It took a while to kind of warm into the process because we didn't go in having directed a film together before, or let alone co-directing and co-starring. So we sort of found it pretty organically. There were definitely days where I'd go home and go, I wish I'd directed a bit more today, or I wish we'd got that shot, or I wish I'd thought about it like that, or, you know, I wish I'd said that improv line or whatever. But I think that we sort of got there with our process in the end.
And one of our on-set producers, Ainsley Gardner, she's also a writer-director. So, you know, when Madeline and I were both in a scene and we want to do some improv, and, of course, what we think is we're coming up with more and more comedy gold. Like, because, you know, when you're improvising, you don't want to be thinking about directing or anything else. You just want to be thinking about the gold. And so we would say to Ainsley, okay, you're allowed to shout out and tell us to stop and you're allowed to call cut. So that was great that there was someone to rein it in.
Yeah, and often, you know, it worked really well on days when neither Jackie or I were in, like, in the scene, though, so we could direct each other. And yeah, on the other days, we'd just go a bit mad. But we got there in the end.
It was fun. It was like a circus. You know, it was fun.
We had a 66% female crew. And
yeah,
cast.
We had a lot of chicks.
Yeah, a lot of chicks, which was also, it was sort of just, that happened organically as well, really. You know, at one point, Jackie and I were both staring back at a full female camera crew, which barely ever
happened
in my...
Two cameras. All females, hey.
So that was cool. So, yeah, there were lots of really, there was a really nice energy on the film.
So you guys have known each other for like 20 years. You've been friends for a long time. You've been crossing paths. But how quickly did the breaker-uppers sort of go from, this would be really fun for us to work together to, oh no, shit, this is actually happening. This is a movie and we want to make.
The idea kind of came to me one day. I got straight on the phone like that day and rang Madeline, said we should like co-write and co-star in this. And then we just started, I went up to your mum's house, and we just started like writing like that week. You put the fire on it? Let's just set the scene.
We had a nice cuddle.
Then we just kept writing and writing and writing. And then the next thing I remember is we pitched the idea to Carthew Neal, who's worked with Madeline a lot and I've known him forever. And he was working, his company was Picky Films, and that was with Taika Waititi as well. And so once they were like, yeah, let's make it a Picky film, that's when things started to really kind of speed up. But it was like 4 years writing on and off until everyone was happy.
We went through sort of a rigorous development period where we were lucky enough to be funded by, through various film commission initiatives. So it enabled us to kind of hunker down and like do a bit of work on the script in between kind of different projects in life, and you know.
Yeah, and Picky works in quite a collaborative way, so they bring on, you know, would have writers' rooms, and so it'd be workshopping and doing script readings all the time. Yep. So there's quite a few kind of contributors, really.
Yeah, and you know, Jackie and I both came up through theatre, so we both love working in a collaborative kind of improvisational kind of setting. So yeah. we ran a workshop with a bunch of comedians just because we wanted to extract as much comedy out of it as we could, and then we kind of went back in and worked on the story and the friendships and things like that. So it was a robust process that was fun.
And all started with a cuddle.
Probably made you a little tea, didn't I?
Yeah, I think we had a tea.
Yeah.
let's set the scene again. Madeline's putting the kettle on.
I forgot about that time you came over and I put that fire on. So I'm glad cool you reminded me of that. Hey, it's such
quite
a
Danish
nice...
in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brilliant concept, though. So how did it just kind of, you know, flick into your head?
Well, I don't know. It just is, well, you know, when you've been quite busy and you suddenly have spare time, and that's when you have all your best ideas, when you stop, you know. Yeah, I just thought of it. I guess I was thinking about, you know, all those conversations that we've all had about, oh, I need to break up with my partner, but I can't face it. I can't face it. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to feel, you know, I feel sorry, I feel bad about it, or they're going to be a real pain about it, or it's going to take years of extraction. And, you know, I just thought, I bet there'd be a lot of people out there that would pay money to have someone else do it for them. You know, I thought that's a terrible idea, but it's a great kind of story idea.
Yeah.
Did you have a favourite, like, breakup scenario to write out of that?
We went through quite a few. I mean, the first draft of this film was ridiculous. Like, it was sort of like a $50 million film. And then we gradually, you know, we gradually got brought down to earth by the fact that we were never going to get that kind of budget. And so, yeah, well, I mean, we kind of... One of the big breakups in the film is Celia Piccola's character, but I always like that one. It's just a real standard kind of breakup, you know, kind of weak husband. Are they married? Can't even remember. Yeah, they're husband, married.
She, there's a divorce
who just
film.
Wants to get out of the way because he wants to go to Rio.
But we always knew that it was going to be a kind of premise-driven film, like, you know, the promise of the premise. But the main challenge for Madeline and I was to develop a kind of the story of the friendship, you know, underneath all of this ridiculousness. And that's what we worked on the most over the writing period, was to making sure there was some heart and warmth to the film. Otherwise, it's just a ridiculous bunch of
silly scenarios, yeah.
So, look, I don't know how much time I've got left, so do we have much time? No, I don't think we've got much time. Madeline, Sammy, I can't even talk now. And Jackie Van Beek from The Breaker Uppers. They're the stars, the directors, the writers. This is 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks. This has been an absolute pleasure. You guys are hilarious. The movie's freaking hilarious. It's going to totally kick ass at Sydney Film Festival opening night tonight. I know that. And look, Deadpool 2 raised a really high bar of the use of Celine Dion in a movie in 2018. And I would have to say, without spoiling much, I... died and thought that your version of a Celine Dion song in a movie is probably the best thing I've seen this year and in a number of years. So thank you.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you. And,
Wunderbar.
And thank you for coming along.
Thank you.
Aren't they just the best?
I don't know. I don't even know where to start. They're just so amazing. They're just, the movie's hilarious. Their chemistry is just outstanding. They've got such a great way of complimenting each other, like complimenting each other's sort of weird manic tangents. They're just a blast, an absolute blast.
Well, if you'd missed it at the Sydney Film Festival, never fear. Guess what? It's coming out in July.
Coming out in July in Oz.
26th. Oh, put it in your diaries.
Have to.
National release.
Have to. I'm. It's so good, guys, that I'm dying to see it again. I had such a blast. It was a ball.
Excellent. Cool, Blake. Till next time. Happy long weekend, guys.
Happy long weekend, guys. Have a great, great long weekend and a safe one.
Bye. We also have an extended chat with Madeline Sami and Jackie Van Beek from The Breaker Upper. As you can check out that full chat on the Gaggle of Geeks podcast. Yes, we have a podcast because all good podcasting platforms. Just look for 2SER's Gaggle of Geeks. And there we are. Woo! Here's a tune now from Nico Case in her first album in about 5 years. Yes, that's 5 years. The album's called Hell On, and this one's called The Last Line of Agony.
Hi, I'm Nishan Woodley, director of the Sydney Film Festival.
Hi, I'm Jenny Neighbour, the documentary programmer at the festival.
And we're going to be telling you about some of the great films showing today at the festival.
Today at the festival, we have The Venerable W, a extraordinary film by Babette Choder, which looks at the story of a Buddhist monk who's stirring up hatred in Myanmar. And we also have Whitney, Kevin MacDonald. He made the extraordinary Touching the Void a few years back. Straight from Cannes, his film on Whitney Houston, which reveals a lot about her family and her friends.
Tickets for Sydney Film Festival are very easily gotten. Please visit our website, www.sff.org.au, or rock up at the cinema and buy a ticket there. We look forward very much to seeing you at the festival.
Newtown Record Fair is your monthly vinyl record fair in the heart of Newtown. On the first Saturday of every month, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, Newtown Record Fair features over 10,000 vinyl records of all genres, live DJs, tasty cucina menu, and craft beer bar. Your perfect vinyl record experience. Newtown Record Fair, in the back beer garden of the Bank Hotel Newtown. NewtownRecordFair.com.au, a vinyl record partner of 2SER.
The Blacktown Native Institution site in Oakhurst is one of the earliest known facilities in Australia for removing First Nation children from their families. To honour and acknowledge this symbolic landmark, new initiative Nara Nurung Wabayala, Listen, Hear, Think, The Place Speaks, will see new artworks and installations created by Indigenous artists Tony Albert, Sharon Egan and Mugalan Performing Arts as part of a living memorial to the stolen generations. Here to tell us more is Anne Loxley, Senior Curator of the Museum of Contemporary Art's C3 West Initiative. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Sophie.
How are you going?
Thanks, I'm excited. I'm glad this day has arrived.
I know, huge day. It's all happening this afternoon. And it's a huge collaboration between the MCA, Blacktown Arts Centre, as well as local Aboriginal communities. How did the initiative all start?
Well, it started actually even more than 5 years ago from Aboriginal staff. Blacktown, of course, Native Institution is so important to that community. And there was a wonderful Aboriginal producer there 5 or 6 years ago called Andrea James. And Andrea started working on the institution, and there was a really fabulous exhibition curated by the artist Brooke Andrew and the curator at Blacktown Arts, Paul Howard, and it was a whole bunch of Aboriginal artists working with the community and addressing this history and that site. So there's a wonderful exhibition in 2013 at the Arts Centre and a series of beautiful public program installations on site. So from then, from that work, then Blacktown Arts Centre invited C3 West to collaborate with them on a development of sort of addressing the site and working with the community and the site through art and artists. And so we did our first collaboration with them, C3 West and Blacktown, in 2014 and 15. And then I went on to our what is Blacktown Arts Centre's third major project on the site and C3 West's second.
Amazing. You have some fantastic artists involved. Tony Abbott, who's from North Queensland, Sharon Egan from Perth, as well as the Mungalan Performing Arts. They're quite, you know, they're from all around Australia. What was the decision in choosing these artists?
Well, when you're working with stories and people, that helps direct which artists you would like to make the invitation to. And Tony has a spectacular history of working with community in really creative and innovative and generous ways. And he's wonderful with children. And, of course, children are a very important part of this site, not just in terms of the institution, but the Aboriginal community. It means so much to them to have kids on the site, which is really important. So we wanted Tony because we've just, his work is so wonderful and his methodology is really quite exceptional. And the same with Sharon. There's been a very strong desire from the community for a long, long time to make visible on the site this important history. And Sharon is a wonderful Noongar woman artist, and she, one of her main media is weaving, and weaving, it's a, in Indigenous culture, the more I learn, weaving is very much associated with sharing, sharing of stories, sitting down slowly, you know, using your hands and talking. And Sharon has developed a practice where she uses that medium to talk with people and facilitate a safe space where people exchange their stories and share. So we were really interested in that methodology. And we also, she herself is a Stolen Generation. She's from the Stolen Generation. And we knew that was a... we wanted to underscore that this is a national story as well as a local story. So not only her practice, but it is important to us to have to underscore that this is a national thing. And she's also got a wonderful practice of making work for the public domain, using weaving, a wonderful traditional weaving methods, but with durable, you know, new school materials like marine rope. And so we thought Sharon might be the person who'd make a marker for the site. And that's indeed what she's been doing, working with the community to make a beautiful sculpture of 7 flannel flowers, 8 meters tall. Wow. Amazing. And Mugalin, we wanted Mugalin, a wonderful Aboriginal performance company, and they have been artists in residence in Blacktown. They continue to produce really important work, and they have very strong links with that community. And Blacktown Native Institution, you know, the people's stories, the stories of the Blacktown Native Institution and the stories of Aboriginal people in Blacktown are very, very important to our project. So we wanted people, we thought a performance company would round out what we were doing. It's a bit exciting to see Free West. We have never actually engaged a performance company before. We work with performance artists, but never like theatre makers. So it's been quite exciting to be working with Mugalin.
Fantastic. Now, Mugalin, they're doing a bit of an ode to the local Darug people. What are they doing?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's obviously, as a non-Aboriginal person, I am feel so privileged to be working with this material, and it's very interesting to for me to understand the position that Mugalin take, and it's a very strong political position. They don't want to really dwell on that colonial moment of the taking of the children. They want to talk about the continuum of Aboriginal culture. Of course, Aboriginal people have always been here and they never left, and their culture has continued. So there's this wonderful celebration of local Aboriginal culture, and also a real emphasis on young people, young Aboriginal people in Western Sydney. So they're working with local Aboriginal choreographers and kids to present a series of dances and performance on a big dance ground, a bora, which is there in all its sandy glory, and also working with some Gunya specialists, Morgan and Dave Blakeney from the South Coast. So we've got a series of Gunyas on site. So the Gunyas are animated by projections that Mugalin have worked with the local kids, beautiful portraits of each other, and they also are housing Tony Albert's object. So Mugalin have kind of created this big footprint, so to speak, for the ceremony and performances that are going to unroll there this afternoon, as well as a wonderful series of dances by the local choreographers and young people.
Fantastic. Now, Tony's project, he was actually working with local community members. Can you tell us a bit more about that collaboration?
Yes. So Tony worked with 10 Aboriginal kids and their families, local, as you say, and got them to reimagine 10 kids from the Blacktown Native Institution. And they made portraits of them, and then Tony has taken those portraits made by the children and developed them into beautiful art objects. And each child, each contemporary child, reflecting on the historical child, has really thought about their likes and dislikes. There's these charming little lines like he liked cricket or other wonderful kind of just evocations of particularity and personality. And then Tony has taken those drawings and then made them into 10 beautiful sculptural objects. For example, the boy who liked cricket, Tony has mounted that portrait on a beautiful cricket bat. And the beautiful, one of the portraits of the children, he's then kind of contained in what looks like, say, a basket or a nest, which is woven, and woven into that basket or nest is a teddy bear. They're the most tender, divine objects, radiating love and also great artistry, just like all Tony's work does. But he's got his 10 objects, and then he's made a set of what he calls lanyards. I wish we could call them wearable miniatures, but nonetheless, I'm only a curator. So we've got 10 sets of these beautiful miniature resin copies of each of those 10 portraits. And so people this afternoon, these beautiful little resin portraits have strings made, woven strings woven out of all kinds of things that the kids have made with Tony. And anybody who wants to come down the site this afternoon, they can weave some more string with Tony Albert. But you and all the visitors this afternoon are invited to put on one of these little miniature resin portraits of those historical children reimagined, and walk the site and think about them and be there experiencing the site. Smelling the site, the wonderful activities, and think also of the child whose portrait you are wearing. And Tony is also inviting people to gift a memory. We've had printed beautiful paper that's embedded with seeds of plants that are native to that area, and we are all invited to write a really great memory on this piece of seeded paper. And then in time, we are going to plant those seeds on the site. So it's this beautiful gesture of healing the site.
Sounds like it's going to be a beautiful and very poignant afternoon. It's all happening down at Oakhurst later today. But Anne, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Sophie.
There was Anne Loxley, the senior curator of the MCA's C3 West Initiative. You can see Nara Nurong Wabayala, Listen, Hear, Think, The Place Speaks, later today at 4 p.m. at the Blacktown Native Institution site in Oakhurst. We'll put all those details up along with this podcast on 2SER. My time here is just about up. Big thanks to all my guests today. Daniel Riley from Bangarra Dance Theatre. You can see Dark Emu from this Friday at the Sydney Opera House. To Madeline Sami and Jackie Van Beek, the directors, writers and stars of the hilarious, and I mean hilarious, new film, The Breaker Uppers. You can catch our full chat with them on the Gaggle of Geeks podcast. Look out for an all good podcasting platforms. And to Anne Loxley, who we just spoke to about a brand new initiative at the Blacktown Native Institution site in Oakhurst, honouring the stolen generations. It is the end of financial years. If you have a few spare dollars, we would love them. If you want to give us a donation, just head on to 2SER.com and click on the donation tab. Your donation will be well used to keep this station running and alive, because we really do love what we're doing here, but we couldn't do it without you. So if you want those tax breaks, you know, give us a little something something. But enjoy the rest of your long weekend. I certainly have right here on this show. It is so hot right now, your weekly dose of art and culture. I'll leave you with a couple of messages from our sponsors. But till next week, I'm Sophie Lai. Bye.
Are you an artist, curator, or creative practitioner with a great exhibition or idea burning a hole in your pocket? UTS Gallery is calling for proposals for its 2019 exhibition program. With a focus on socially engaged and critical art and design practices, UTS Gallery presents an annual exhibition program that reflects our changing world. Applications close on June 20, so head to art.uts.edu.au for more info. UTS Art, a space for art and ideas. Sponsors 2SER.
In a society inundated with technology,
one podcast will set out to document the weird, the wonderful and mind-boggling stories of the digital age. Think. Digital Futures.
Finding the human in the machine. Tune in 6:30 p.m. Tuesdays or 10:30 a.m. Sundays.
Brought to you by the University of Technology Sydney and 2SER 107.3.